Chapter 46. They pulled chairs close to the glass table and crowded around the screen to read. Michael McCann was signed up for 2 suicide boards. In both cases, he posted under the name of Mike. He wrote flatly, laboriously, as if numbed, as if exhausted by his burdens. His spelling was good, and his grammar was formal. Not naturally, Reacher thought, but as if he had been told there was a special way to do it, out in the public domain. Like public speaking, you put on a shirt and tie. The first board was the hookup board. Michael was looking for a sympathetic companion. Not that he needed help, not all of the time. More that he felt he could give it, at least some of the time. In many months, he had brief conversations with 2 candidates and then seemed to settle on a 3rd who went by the name of Exit. They began messaging often. Meanwhile, the second board was the How board, which sometimes strayed into other discussions. Michael contributed now and then with measured words, and never with anger or haste. He defended his right to catch the bus. He showed up in a thread about how to take Nembutal. He was anxious for guidance. In its commercial form, its taste was said to be bitter. Best to mask it with juice or chase it with scotch, which enhanced its efficiency anyway. It was always wise to take an anti-emetic beforehand, like a seasickness pill. No one wanted to throw up and be left with a less than fatal dose on board. No one wanted to wake up 20 hours later with it all to do again. Michael also commented in a thread about the reliability of Nembutal's suppliers. He had been ripped off more than once. The market was a jungle. All a con man needed was a good website. No one could know exactly who he was. A guy in Thailand was supposed to be kosher. And then someone posted that MR had delivered, exactly as promised, genuine stuff that tested right. Another poster backed him up. MR were good people, he said. The real deal. Michael queried, MR? The first guy came back to the board and said, Mother's Rest. Then, over on the hookup board, a day later, Michael told Exit he had checked the Mother's Rest website, and he thought Exit should look at it too, because there was much to discuss, especially on level 5. No further details. Reacher said, What's level 5? The guy from Palo Alto said, Think of the onion. Many layers, deeper and deeper. The web itself and every site on it. The sign-in page is usually level 2. Level 4 is usually the first page of merchandise. Therefore, level 5 is likely to be special merchandise. On the board, Exit had replied, and said level 5 was interesting. But that was late in the sequence, and the discussion went no further. It was overtaken by Michael's physical move to Oklahoma, to Exit's place near Tulsa, his suicide partner, to get ready. Reacher assumed the discussion was continued in person. He said, Can we take a look at the Mother's Rest website? The guy said, We'd have to find it first. You did okay before. You were 6 seconds under. I knew where to look. This next one will be measured in minutes, if we're lucky. How many minutes? What's the wager? 20, the guy said. He typed commands and loaded up with search terms and keywords. He hit the Go tab, and the clock in Reacher's head started running. Everyone pushed back from the glass table and stretched and got comfortable and got ready to wait. Westwood said, The 200 deaths could be 200 Nembutal customers. I'm not sure what to think about it. From a news perspective, I mean. Is it the scandal? It's legal in Washington and Oregon. Not the same thing, the guy from Palo Alto said. You need 2 doctors to sign off. You need to be about 100 years old with a terminal disease. These guys wouldn't qualify, and mostly they're pissed about it. Then it becomes an ethical debate. Do we respect a person's choices, plain and simple, or do we feel obliged to judge his reasons?
Not his reasons, Chang said. That's too intrusive. But I think we should judge his commitment. There's a big difference between a short-term panic and a long-term need. Maybe commitment proves reasons. If you hang in there through all the hoops, it must really mean something to you.
And perhaps his current system is a good thing, in its way, inadvertently. There are plenty of hoops. They're certainly earning it.
Reacher said, But what is Mother's Rest earning? 200 Nembutal shipments at 900 bucks a pop is less than 200 grand. Over the whole life of the project, presumably. Less the wholesale cost and the shipping? That's a hobby. And you can't pay guys like Merchenko out of hobby money. Something else is going on there. Has to be. Because. He stopped talking. Chang said,
Because what?
We think the guy was killed there.
What guy?
At the beginning. With the backhoe.
Kiever?
Yeah, Kiever. Why kill Kiever over a hobby? There has to be more.
Level 5 could be special merchandise. Could be worth more.
Reacher glanced at the screen, still searching. 7 minutes gone, he said.
I'm trying to imagine what could be so special to be worth Merchenko money.
The guy from Palo Alto said, They all have my sympathy.
Reacher said, Mine too. I take the point about burning down the building with hibachi girls. But otherwise we should let them do what they want. They didn't ask to be born. It's like taking a sweater back to the store.
Chang said,
Except it shouldn't be either too easy or too difficult, which somehow obliges the rest of us to set the bar. Is that fair on any of us?
Westwood said,
This is exactly what I was afraid of. It's an ethical debate. I could have written it in my office, on standby for a slow month. There was no need to spend travel money. I'm going to get my butt kicked for this.
12 minutes gone. They got drinks, not exactly served, but collected from the kitchen, which was very retro. It looked vaguely like some of the places Reacher could remember as a kid. Family quarters on a dozen bases all around the world. Different weather outside the window. Same cabinets in the kitchen. Some mothers made a big show of scrubbing them down with disinfectant immediately on the first morning. But Reacher's mother was French and believed in acquired immunity, which had worked, generally, although his brother had gotten sick once, more likely a restaurant. He was starting to date.
Chang said, You okay?
He said,
I'm fine.
18 minutes gone. They went back to the den and the clock ticked on. 19 minutes. The guy from Palo Alto said,
We didn't agree on the stakes for the wager.
Reacher said, What did we say the first time?
We didn't.
20 minutes gone. Reacher said,
We don't want to outstay our welcome.
The guy said,
The program will get there. I'm a better geek than they are.
What's the longest search you've ever run?
19 hours.
What did you find?
The president's schedule on an assassin site.
Of the United States?
The very same.
And the schedule was current when I started the search. Did you call it in?
That was a dilemma. I'm not a public resource. And as a matter of fact, there was no more information to be had. A site that took me 19 hours to find would have so many mirrors and decoys the service might as well be on Venus or Mars. But the Secret Service wouldn't have taken that on trust. They'd have torn my stuff apart for their own guys to look at. They'd have tied me up for a year, talking and consulting. So, no, I didn't call it in.
And nothing happened.
Thankfully.
27 minutes, still searching. Then the search stopped. The screen changed to a list of links. Chapter 47. The list of links showed one direct URL for the Mother's Rest website and four sub-pages and one external reference, which the guy from Palo Alto wanted to check first because he said it was unusual. He managed to retrieve an isolated chat room comment made by a poster named Blood. It said, "I hear Mother's Rest has good stuff." It was on a secure board the guy didn't recognize. The context wasn't clear. But it wasn't a suicide board. It belonged to some other community. An enthusiast site, by the feel of it. No other data. Dead end. The guy from Palo Alto said, "We'll go straight to the mothership." No pun intended. He didn't use the trackball. It wasn't that kind of software. It was all typed commands. The guy seemed to like it that way. Old school. He was a veteran. And he was fast. His bone-white fingers pattered up and down almost a blur. The screen redrew into a full-color, full-service website. There was a photograph. The photograph was of a road running dead straight ahead through an infinite sea of wheat, forever, until it disappeared in a golden haze on the horizon, at that point as narrow as a needle. It was the old wagon train trail, the road west out of Mother's Rest. And it was an allegory, obviously. At the top of the page was written, "Take the journey with us." At the bottom was written, "Mother's Rest, at last." The first sub-page link was an About Us piece. They were a community dedicated to providing end-of-life choices, the very best goods, services, care, and concern were solemnly promised. Trust was guaranteed. Discretion was a given. The second subpage link was the sign-in page for community members. Username and password. Probably hard to break. But no need, because the third link bypassed it altogether and led straight down to level 4. The first page of merchandise. There were three items on offer. First was a non-sterile oral Nembutal solution in a 50-milliliter bottle going for $200. Second was an injectable Nembutal solution in a 100-milliliter bottle for $387. Third was a sterile oral Nembutal solution in a 100-milliliter bottle for $450. Safely lethal doses were quoted as 30 milliliters through a needle or 200 milliliters by mouth. Time to a deep sleep was quoted as less than a minute, and time to death was quoted as less than 20. Reacher figured the injectable solution was a hard sell. If a guy was into needles, he could OD on heroin at a tenth of the price. He figured the sterile oral would be the best seller. $900 for a peaceful exit. Sterile sounded clean, somehow. The Holy Grail. But the non-sterile was a better value. Only $800, at the risk of getting stomach flu the day after you were dead. Delivery was $30, with a tracking number, and payment of the whole balance was required prior to dispatch, through Western Union or MoneyGram. Checks or money orders were not accepted. The Nembutal would arrive in a plain package. It should not be refrigerated, but kept tightly sealed and stored in a cool, dry place. Next came a button that said, "Click here to order." Chang said,
"Reacher was right. This page doesn't pay Merchenko."
Westwood said,
"We should take a look at level 5.
It took some time to get there, like dial-up used to be, although Reacher was sure things were happening lightning fast behind the scenes. The guy's code, battling the site's defenses, one warrior against a horde, millions of feints and penetrations every second, burrowing in, driving down through the layers. The page came up. Michael McCann's friend Exit had called it interesting. And it was, Reacher supposed, depending on what a person needed. It offered a concierge service. Members were invited to travel to Mother's Rest by train from Chicago or Oklahoma City. They would be met at the station by a representative, and they would spend the night in a luxury motel. Then came transfer by luxury sedan to the Mother's Rest headquarters. There they would find a private annex with a suite inside designed to resemble a luxury hotel with a calming bedroom ambiance. There they could get comfortable, and at a time of their choosing, an assistant would administer a Nembutal drink and then withdraw. Or, if preferred, for those concerned about gulping a bitter liquid, the assistant would administer a regular sleeping pill and then press a button, and an old 1970s small block Chevy V8 would start up outside, distant and inaudible, but its sweet, rich exhaust would be piped to the room to do its gentle work. Members were invited to inquire as to the cost of the service. It would be substantial, Reacher thought. He pictured the guy from the train, in his suit and his collared shirt, with his fine leather bag, and the woman in her white dress, fit for a garden party in Monte Carlo. Both rich. Both sick, possibly. Both headed for a dignified end. He saw them in his mind. Different people, different days, but the same physical gesture. At room 203's dusty window, standing with their arms held wide, their hands still on the drapes, staring out at the morning as if in wonder. Their last morning. Chang said, "Michael and his friend, is this what they did?" Westwood said, "This is my story, right here. I'll ask if this is the future." "It could be, 100 years from now. Chaos, overpopulation, no water. There could be one of these on every street corner, like Starbucks. But I'll have to see it for myself, having spent the travel money." "Maybe," Reacher said, "after we check it." "What's to check? We know what's there. Veterinary Nembutal goes out by parcel service, and high-end clients come in by train, and who can seriously say either thing is wrong? I could ask if the deep web somehow predicts what's coming next. Maybe it has to. It's human desire, after all, nothing more. Unfiltered and unregulated. Somehow organic. The book rights for this one are in the philosophy section, because this is how these things happen. We've seen these things happen. 100 years from now, this could be normal." Kiva didn't think it was normal yet. He could have shrugged his shoulders. He could have changed his name to Wittgenstein and gotten out of the way of progress. But he saw something wrong. "Do you?" "I'm not sure." But Kiva was sure. "What could be wrong?" "I don't see how Michael and his friend can have afforded the concierge service. Not if they saved up all their lives. So where the hell are they?" The guy from Palo Alto said, "Are we done?" Chang said, "We are. And thank you very much." Reacher said, "You're the man. You're down there among them. They can't see you, but you can see them." Westwood said, "Send me an invoice." The guy said, "I'll get you a car," and he pressed his phone. People got up, and Reacher took a step toward the door, and another, and then the floor on the left slammed upward at a crazy angle, just canted itself to 45 degrees, some immense force. instantaneous, and he thought, earthquake, and it tipped him over and smashed him into the doorframe across the chest and the neck like a blow from a 2x4, followed by a clatter to the floor and a desperate glance around for Chang and whatever else was coming next. Not an earthquake. He sat up. Everyone else squatted down. He said, I'm okay. Chang said,
you fell over.
Maybe a board was loose.
The boards are fine.
Maybe there's a warp.
Do you have a headache?
Yes.
You're going to the emergency room.
Bullshit.
You forgot Kiever's name. You had to say, the guy who was killed with the backhoe. That's classic aphasia. You forgot a word and you worked around it. That's not good. And before that, you tripped near the bookstore. And you keep drifting off, like daydreaming or talking to yourself.
Do I?
Like it's all spacey in there.
How was it normally?
You're going to the emergency room.
Bullshit. Don't need it.
For me, Reacher.
Waste of time. We should go direct to the hotel.
I'm sure you're right, but do it for me.
I've never done it before.
There's a first time for everything. I hope not just this.
Reacher said nothing.
For me, Reacher.
The guy from Palo Alto said, go to the emergency room, man. Reacher looked at Westwood and said, help me out here. Westwood said, emergency room. The guy from Palo Alto said, tell them you're a coder. No waiting time. Some of those companies make big donations. They did as the guy said and claimed a status Reacher did not have and was never likely to have. Right down there in terms of probability with Quilter or Scrapbooker or tenor in the choir. But it got him seen in 90 seconds, and 90 seconds after that he was on his way for a CT scan of his head, which he said was bullshit, don't need it, waste of time. But Chang hung in there, and they fired up the machine, which was nothing much, a kind of electric buzz, just x-rays, and then a wait for a doctor to look at the file, which Reacher said was bullshit, waste of time, the same things over again, and Chang hung in again, and eventually a guy showed up with a file in his hand and a look in his eye. Chang and Westwood stayed in the room. Reacher said, the CT in CT scan stands for computed tomography. The guy with the file said, I know. I know what day of the week it is, and I know who the president is. I know what I had for breakfast both times. I'm proving there's nothing wrong with me.
You have a head injury?
That's not possible.
You have a head? It can be injured. You have a cerebral contusion. In Latin, contusio cerebri. In fact, technically two, both coup and contra coup, caused quite clearly by blunt trauma to the right side of the head.
Reacher said, is that the good news or the bad news?
The guy said, if you had taken that punch on the upper arm, you'd expect one hell of a bruise. Which is exactly what you got. Not on the outside. Not enough flesh. The bruise is on the inside. On your brain. With a twin across the hole. Because your brain bounced from side to side in your skull like a goldfish in a test tube. What we call coup and contra-coup.
Reacher said, symptoms
will vary with the severity of the injury and the individual, but to some degree will include headache, confusion, sleepiness, dizziness, loss of consciousness, nausea, vomiting, seizures, and difficulties with coordination, movement, memory, vision, speech, hearing, managing emotion, and thinking.
That's a lot of symptoms.
It's the brain.
What about mine in particular? Which symptoms will I get?
Oh, I can't say.
You have my paperwork right there, an actual picture.
It can't be interpreted exactly.
Case closed, right there. You're only guessing. I've been hit in the head before. This is no different, no big deal.
It's a head injury.
What's the next part of your speech?
I think the scan justifies admission overnight for observation.
That ain't going to happen.
It should.
If the guy hit me in the arm, you'd tell me I'd be okay in a couple of days. The bruise would go down. You'd send me home. You can do the same thing with my head. It happened yesterday, so tomorrow will be a couple of days. I'll be fine. If it is what you say it is, anyway. You could have gotten that file mixed up with somebody else.
The brain is not the same thing as an arm.
I agree. An arm is not protected by a thick layer of bone.
The guy said, "You're a grown-up. This is not a psychiatric facility. I can't keep you here against your will. Just sign yourself out at the desk."
And then he turned around and headed out, ready for the next in line. Maybe a coder, maybe not.
The door swung shut behind him. Reacher said, "It's a bruise. It's getting better."
Chang said,
"Thank you for having it checked. Let's go find the hotel."
"Should have gone direct."
"Reacher, you fell over."
He walked carefully all the way to the cab line.
Chapter 48. People said that on a map, San Francisco looked like a thumb sticking up south to north, shielding the bay from the Pacific. But Reacher thought it curved more like a raised middle finger, although why the city should be mad at the ocean, he didn't know. The fog, maybe. But either way, the hotel Westwood had chosen was at the tip, where either the thumbnail or the fingernail would be, right on the waterfront. It was dark, so the view was a void, apart from the Golden Gate Bridge, which was all lit up on the left. And then further out on the right was the distant twinkle of Sausalito and Tiburon. They checked in and washed up and met in the restaurant for dinner. It was a pretty room with plenty of crisp white linen. There were couples and foursomes in there. They were the only threesome. Trysts and deals were going on all around them. Westwood got the internet on his phone and said, 40,000 suicides every year in America. One every 13 minutes. Statistically, we're more likely to kill ourselves than each other. Who knew? Chang said,
if 5 of them every 9 days use the Mother's Rest concierge service, that's a couple hundred a year. Like Kiever's note. We already saw, too.
Reacher said, what would you pay for that?
I wouldn't, I hope.
If it's $900 to do it yourself in bed, then what would be reasonable? 5 times as much? Say, $5,000?
Maybe, for the pampering, like going to the spa instead of filing your nails at home.
That would be $1 million a year. Better than a poke in the eye with a sharp stick.
But
their proposed hit list this week alone was Kiever, McCann, you, me, and the Lair family. 7 people. Which is not a problem, apparently, because they rent a Ukrainian tough guy to do the heavy lifting. That's a big reaction for $1 million.
People get killed for $1.
On the street, in a panic, not as a strategic imperative. I think there's more in this than $1 million, but I don't see how. Folks wouldn't pay $10,000 or $20,000 or more, would they? They could buy their own 1970s Chevy. They could buy a garden shed and drill a hole.
This is not necessarily a rational decision, and it's totally based on not buying your own Chevy, That's the point. Full service.
So what would they pay?
I don't know.
It's hard to picture it. Imagine you're a rich guy and you want out. One final luxury. Discreet people in the background making sure it all goes okay. Care and concern and hands to hold. It's a major event in your life, obviously. You might pay what you paid for your car, which is probably a Mercedes or a BMW. 50 grand, maybe? Or even 80. Or more. I mean, why not? You can't take it with you.
Westwood said, "When are we going there?"
Reacher said, "When we've made a plan. It's a tactical challenge, like approaching a small island across an open sea. It's as flat as a pool table there. The grain elevators are the tallest things in the county. I'm sure they have all kinds of ladders and catwalks for maintenance. They'll post lookouts. They'll see us coming 10 minutes away, and if we come by train, they'll be lined up on the ramp, just waiting for us.
We could drive in by night.
They would see the headlights 100 miles away.
We could switch them off.
We wouldn't see our way. It's pitch black at night. It's the countryside.
The roads are straight.
Plus, at the moment, we're unarmed."
Westwood said nothing.
After dinner, Westwood went to his room, and Reacher and Chang took a stroll outside, on the Embarcadero, near the water. The night was cool, literally half of the Phoenix temperature. Chang had nothing but her T-shirt. She walked pressed up hard against him for warmth. It made them clumsy, like a three-legged creature. Reacher said,
"Are you holding me up, Ryan?"
She said, "How do you feel now?"
"Still got a headache."
"I don't want to go back to Mother's Rest until you feel better."
"I'm fine. Don't worry."
"I wouldn't go back there at all if it wasn't for Kiever. Who am I to judge? They're meeting a need. Maybe Westwood is right. Maybe we'll all be doing it in 100 years.
Reacher said nothing. She said,
"What?"
"I was going to say I would save the money and choose the shotgun. But that would be tough on whoever found me. There would be a lot of mess. Same with the handgun. Same with hanging myself or jumping off the roof. Stepping in front of a train isn't fair to the engineer. Even drinking the Kool-Aid in a motel room isn't fair to the maid. Maybe that's why people choose a concierge service. Easier on the folks they leave behind. That's worth a premium, I guess. But I still don't see how it adds up to Merchenko money."
"I don't see how we get back there. It's like they have a 10-mile-high razor wire fence, except laid down flat."
"We should start out in Oklahoma City."
"You want to take the train?"
"I want to keep our options open. We'll figure out the fine print later. Tell Westwood to book the flights."
Reacher woke very early the next morning, before Chang, and he slid out of bed and shut himself in the bathroom. He had given up on his previous theory. Forever. It had been proven categorically wrong. Repeatedly. There was no ceiling. There was no upper limit. There was no reason why it should ever stop. Which was good to know. He stood in front of the mirror and twisted and turned and checked himself over. He had new bruises from falling down. The old bruise on his back, where Hackett had hit him, was vivid yellow and the size of a dinner plate. But he wasn't pissing blood, and the ache was going away and the stiffness was easing. The side of his head was still tender and a little soft, but not exactly swollen. Not enough flesh, like the doctor had said. His headache was moderate. He wasn't sleepy. He wasn't dizzy. He stood on one leg and closed his eyes and didn't sway. He was conscious. No nausea. He hadn't thrown up. no seizures. He walked a line of tiles from the tub to the toilet and back again with his eyes closed, and he didn't stray. He touched his nose with his fingertip and then rubbed his stomach while patting his head. No problems with coordination or movement, beyond his innate and inevitable slight clumsiness. He was no ballet dancer. Neat and deft and dexterous were adjectives that had never applied. The door opened behind him and Chang stepped in. He saw her in the mirror. She looked soft and sleepy. She yawned and said,
Good morning.
He said, to you too.
What are you doing?
Checking my symptoms. The doctor gave me a hell of a list.
How far did you get?
I still have to do memory, vision, speech, hearing, managing emotion, and thinking.
You already passed managing emotion. I've been quite impressed, for a guy who was in the army. Now, tell me three famous Oklahomans, since that's where we're going.
Mickey Mantle, obviously. Johnny Bench, Jim Thorpe. Bonus points for Woody Guthrie and Ralph Ellison.
Your memory is fine.
She retreated to the tub and held up two fingers.
How many?
Two.
Your vision is fine.
Not a very stringent test.
Okay, stay where you are and tell me who made the bathtub.
He looked. There was small, faint writing near the overflow hole. American Standard, he said, because he already knew.
Your vision is fine, she said again.
She whispered something very softly. On the plane? He said. I'm totally up for that.
Your hearing is fine, that's for sure.
What's the longest word in the Gettysburg Address? Which symptom is that?
Thinking.
He thought. There are three, all with 11 letters, proposition, battlefield, and consecrated.
Now recite the first sentence, like you were an actor on a stage.
Lincoln was coming down with smallpox at the time, did you know that?
That's not it.
I know, that was for extra credit on memory.
We already did memory, remember? Now we're doing speech. The first sentence.
The guy who founded Getty Oil was descended from the guy the town of Gettysburg was named for.
That's not it either.
That was general knowledge.
Which is not even a symptom.
It relates to memory.
We did memory ages ago.
He said, loud, like an actor, 4 score and 7 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. It sounded good in a bathroom. The marble gave it echo and resonance. He said, louder, now we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation, or any nation so conceived and so dedicated, can long endure. She said,
has your headache gone?
He said, more or less.
Which means it hasn't yet.
It's on its way out. It was never a big deal.
The doctor thought it was.
The medical profession has gotten very timid, very cautious, no sense of adventure. I lived through the night. I didn't need observation. Chang said,
I'm glad he was cautious.
Reacher said nothing. Then Westwood called on the room phone to say his travel people had booked seats on United, the only direct flight of the day, but no rush because it left halfway through the morning. So they ordered room service coffee to be delivered right away, and then room service breakfast to be delivered in exactly 1 hour's time. Very early in San Francisco, was a couple hours into the day and Mother's rest. Not the difference between city and country habits, but merely time zones. Mother's rest was ahead. The general store was doing business. The diner had a few last stragglers. The motel maid was hard at work. The one-eyed clerk was in the bathroom. The Cadillac driver was in his store, and Western Union and MoneyGram and FedEx were busy. But the spare parts store was closed for the irrigation systems, and the diner had no counter service. Those two guys were on a metal walkway on top of what they called Elevator 3, the old concrete giant, the biggest they had, with binoculars and a simple system. There were two roads in, one from the east and one from the west, which was the wagon train trail, running crossways almost directly below them. But there were no roads in from the north or the south, just the railroad tracks. The system split the risk heavily in favor of the roads. The guys sat across from each other, one looking west, one looking east, and once every 5 minutes or so they would turn and scan the railroad to the north and south, a leisurely sweep from close to far, just in case someone was walking in or using some weird self-propelled machine like an old Western movie. It became a ritual, a chance to stretch, except at train time. Then the roll was harder. They were looking straight down on the train, more or less, so they could see the far side. Almost. Certainly they would see someone force a door and jump down on the blind side, like an old spy movie. But at the same time, equal attention had to be paid to the roads. Always. Intrusion by vehicle was judged far more likely. Which meant, apart from once in the morning and once in the evening, the binoculars were trained on the far horizon for early warning, through the dust in the air, fine and golden close by, then a haze in the distance. Visibility? About 15 miles. You know the plan. You know it works. They checked out, and a doorman got a cab, and they squeezed in, three across the rear seat, with a measure of regret in some, but not in Westwood, who was a little unsettled. He said, "That was a very weird hotel. Only in San Francisco, I guess. All the time I was showering, they had some guy reciting the Gettysburg Address through the bathroom ventilator." Chapter 49. The flight was fine, and the Oklahoma City Hotel the L.A. Times had booked was a grand old three-spired confection, built 100 years before and gone a little musty, but rescued by a refresh about a decade in the past. It was adequate in every respect, and most of all, it retained the kind of service Reacher wanted. He said to Chang, "Go chat with the concierge and tell him you're the kind of person who likes to get to know a town by walking all over. But tell him, naturally, you're concerned about safety. Ask him if there are parts you should avoid." She came back 10 minutes later with a paper tourist map, printed by the thousand for convention folk, and marked up by the concierge with a ballpoint pen. Certain inner-city neighborhoods were walled off by a thick blue line. No-go areas, like a napkin sketch of East Berlin in the old days. One particular quadrant was both walled off and then re-emphasized with an X so vigorous it scored through the paper. Chang said,
"He told me not to go there, day or night."
"My kind of place," Reacher said.
"I'm coming with you."
"I was counting on it."
They ate early, a late afternoon equivalent of brunch. Plain ingredients, dressed up, fancy. The coffee was good. Afterward, they waited an hour for the sun to set. The long plains day came to an end. The streetlights came on Headlights came on. The bar noise changed from afternoon quiet to evening buzz. Reacher said, "Let's go." It was a long walk, because the city fathers knew which side their bread was buttered. Convention business had to be protected. The wild frontier was many blocks away. The street life changed as they walked, from occasional busy workers heading home briskly to a stoop culture with knots of people hanging out in doorways doing not very much of anything. Some of the stores had been shuttered at the close of business, and some looked like they had been boarded up for years, but others were still open and doing a trade. Food, soda, loose cigarettes. Chang said,
"You okay?"
"Doing fine," Reacher said. He navigated by instinct, looking for the kind of place where people could gather and cars could double park for a moment. There were cars at the curbs and some in motion. There were tricked-out Japanese coupes and lowriders and enormous old aircraft carrier sedans from Buick and Plymouth and Pontiac. Some had custom modifications, with wide mag wheels and chrome pipes and blue chassis lights underneath. One car was lowered waist-high, with the motors sticking up through a hole in the hood panel, vertical, like a miniature oil rig, with a huge four-barrel carburetor and a giant chrome air filter about level with the roof. Reacher stopped and looked at it. He said, "I need to see those satellite pictures again." Chang said,
"Why?"
"There's something wrong with them."
"What?"
"I don't know. Something in the back of my mind. Not a regular memory thing. I'm okay."
"You sure?"
"Ask me a question."
"Teddy Roosevelt's vice president, Charles Fairbanks." "I thought he was a movie actor."
"I think that was Douglas." They moved on, past sagging wood houses set close together, past weedy front yards behind wire fences, some empty, some full of trash, some with chained dogs, some littered with bright bicycles and tricycles and other children's toys. They found a diagonal street that cut the corner between one not quite main drag and another. It was wide enough for three lanes, but the curbs were parked solid. It was long enough to slow down and stop and speed up again. Reacher said, "This should be fine." There was stoop activity, but most of it was happening about halfway down the street. Young guys, maybe 12 years old, milling around in groups, scanning left and right for traffic. Reacher said, "Okay, here's where we pretend we suddenly realize what we've gotten ourselves into, and we beat a hasty retreat." They turned around and hustled back to the not-quite-main drag behind them. They turned the tight right and walked on, roughly the same direction they had been headed, behind the street they had seen. They stopped when they guessed they were level with the invisible knot of 12-year-olds, who they figured were hanging out a long lot's length to their right, plus the depth of their own backyard, plus the depth of their own house, plus their own front yard and the sidewalk. About 400 dark feet, Reacher figured. He said, "Let's go see what they have for us." Chapter 50. They picked a boarded-up house with a broken chain on its gate. They went in, swift and decisive like they belonged, and they slipped down the side of the house and through its backyard to its back fence, which shared a blunt angle with the backyard of a house on the diagonal street. Probably not the house they were looking for, but close. Reacher forced a wire panel out of its frame, and they slipped through, unobtrusive except for the white gleam of their faces in the yellow evening gloom. They walked through the new backyard and checked the view between the house and its neighbor. They were one short. All the commerce was taking place one lot to the left. There was a chain-link fence separating the yards. Easily climbed at the cost of metallic chinking and clinking, Chang was agile.
better than Reacher. He was built for bulldozing, not gymnastics. The backyard they climbed into was ill-maintained. Not really maintained at all, to be accurate. It was full of thigh-high grass and weeds. The rear of the house had one lit window. Reacher said, "Keep your right hand in your pocket when you can. Make them think you have a weapon."
"Does that work?"
"Sometimes." She said,
"Are they dope dealers?"
He nodded. "Like drive-through hamburgers. They use juveniles to carry the baggies and the cash back and forth to the cars. Young enough not to get arrested. Although that part might have changed. Might be just a myth these days. Especially in Oklahoma. They probably try them as adults now." The lit window was on the right. Probably a living room of some kind. On the left was a window and a door, both dark. A kitchen, presumably. They swished through the miniature prairie to the door. Reacher tried the handle. Locked. He stepped sideways and looked in the window. A dim space piled high with trash and dirty dishes, pizza rinds, and empty cans, Red Bull and beer. Reacher took another sideways step and pressed against the wall. He looked in the lit window, half an eye at an angle. He saw two guys. They were sprawled on separate sofas, staring at their phones. Their thumbs were moving. They were playing games, or texting. On a low table between them were two duffel bags, black nylon, new but poor quality, the kind of thing that costs $5 in a store selling cameras for 10 and telescopes for 20. On top of one bag was a bulk pack of rubber bands from an office supply store. On top of the other bag was an Uzi submachine gun. Reacher crept back and rejoined Chang at the kitchen door. He whispered,
"We need to find a rock." "For the window?"
He nodded.
"What about that?"
He looked where she was pointing, a grudging yard of concrete patio. A square item with rounded corners, slightly humped, a hole in the center. Some kind of tough material, plastic or vinyl or a blend. A base for a sun umbrella. He whispered,
"Can you throw that?"
She said,
"Sure."
He smiled. No kind of a willowy waif. He said, "One second after I kick the door." She picked it up. He got in position. He whispered,
"Okay."
She nodded. One step, two, three, and he smashed his heel through the lock, and the door burst open, and as he fell inside, he heard the living room window shatter and the umbrella base crash to the floor. He danced through the kitchen to the living room and found the guy on the left still holding his phone and the guy on the right with his hand moving fast toward the Uzi, but it was suddenly hooking short, because his shoulders were suddenly hunching and flinching away, a reflex reaction to the loud crash behind him and the brittle shower of glass on his head and his neck and the blur of a large backyard object flying through his field of vision. Also flying through his field of vision was Reacher's right boot, which caught him on the side of the face and laid him out like an old raincoat tossed down on a shiny floor. Which was game over, right there. Because from that point onward, all Reacher had to do was scoop up the Uzi, click the selector to auto, clamp the grip safety, and aim the muzzle at the left-hand guy's heart. He said,
"Stay still."
And the guy did. No sound from the hallway. Summertime, a warm evening, everyone out on the street. The guy said,
"What is this?"
Reacher said, "This is where we take your guns and money." The guy glanced at the bag with the rubber bands on top. A reflex, involuntary. Chang stepped in behind them, fist in her pocket. Reacher said,
"Search them both."
She did, fast and thorough. Quantico training. She came up with nothing of interest from either guy, except a car key and two handguns. The car key was for an Audi, and the handguns were a Glock 17 and a Beretta 92. both 9mm weapons, same as the Uzi. Their ammunition logistics were neat and tidy, if nothing else. Reacher said, "Look in the bags." She did. The bag the Uzi had been sitting on held thousands of small glassine packets full of dirty brown powder. Heroin, presumably. Cut and cut and cut again, now packaged and ready for street-level sale. The bag with the rubber bands held money. A lot of money. Sour, greasy bills. Fives and tens and twenties. Loose and bricked and rolled. Some torn, some crumpled, all jammed in tight. Hence the rubber bands, Reacher guessed. Once he had read a book about a cartel accountant who spent $5,000 a month on rubber bands alone, just to package all the cash. He said, "Where's the Audi?" The guy said,
"Up front. Good luck with that."
"You're coming with us. You're going to carry the bags."
"Bullshit.
Get over yourself. You win some, you lose some. We're not the cops. You're still in business. You'll make this back in a couple of weeks. Now, move your ass." The guy got a bag in each hand, and Reacher pushed him ahead to the hallway, one hand on his collar, the other jamming the Uzi in the small of his back. Chang carried the Glock in her right hand and the Beretta in her left. The hallway was long and filthy, and there were street sounds up ahead. Trash talk, laughter, scuffling feet, moving cars, all boxy and dulled by the heat and the distance and the closed front door.
10 seconds more, Reacher said. Stay smart and live long.
He hauled the guy to the side and let Chang duck ahead and open the door. Then Reacher pushed the guy outside, and the talk and the laughter stopped. There were 11 people out there, some in the yard, some on the sidewalk, some in the gutter. One of them, a little boy about 2 years old, three of them women under 20, two of them hard men about 30, and the other five skinny kids about 12, the back-and-forth gophers. On the street a car drove by, slowly, just posing, with a loud bass line flexing the panels. Then it was gone. And Reacher pushed the guy ahead, and his people stepped up, ready to fight, but the guy said, "Leave it." Chang blipped the key, and a black sedan flashed its lights. It was smaller than a town car, but not compact. Chang opened the rear door, and Reacher made the guy drop the bags on the seat. Then he turned the guy around and shoved him back toward the house. He kept the Uzi leveled. Chang got behind the wheel. Reacher backed into the passenger seat. Chang took off hard. Reacher pulled a heroin bag off the back seat and emptied it out the window as she accelerated away. Tiny glassine packets blew everywhere, shiny and brown like a plague of dead locusts, like a whirlwind slipstream. Folks ran in the road, scooping them up, chasing the car, leapfrogging ahead of each other, trying to grab whatever they could, with the guys from the house running around too, trying to restore order, trying to reclaim what was theirs. And that was all Reacher saw, because Chang spooled a fast left turn at the end of the diagonal street, and after that its residents were lost to sight.